So good evening. It's really nice to be here with you tonight. And I'm going to share some of my understanding and musings about Chapter 5 of the Lotus Sutra. And this is the sutra that it's a compilation of teachings and stories about the Buddha and his life. And it's the book, the sort of study that we've been focusing on during the practice period these last several weeks. And I myself am a newcomer to the Lotus Sutra. It's the first time that I've read it and studied it, listening to the Dharma talks in the last few weeks and reading the book. And I've heard the name before because it's a very well-known sutra, but I have to confess that I've not been much of a scholar or reader of Buddhist texts and literature. I've been riveted by the practice, you know, coming again and again to the cushion and finding a strange and powerful strength from just sitting alone and with others. And the wisdom of the teachings has come to me through the minds and mouths of other people, my teachers and my Dharma brothers and sisters. And I've been very grateful for their efforts. They've pondered over the teachings and presented them in Dharma talks that have resonated deeply for me. And most of the time I felt a bit intimidated by the seemingly massive volumes of words and literature and lists and names and history and stories. So I've appreciated not having to work at it myself, usually, and to study and analyze and memorize. I've done a lot of that in my life, and it's felt like that part of my brain has been on sabbatical. So it's been interesting for me right now to be presented with this opportunity to study the Lotus Sutra and with the Sangha, and for tonight to take one chapter of it myself and formulate my own Dharma talk. And I've had a mixture of joyful gratitude for this opportunity to work through my barriers and become a scholar and a teacher. And on the other hand, my dismay about not getting away with just sitting and resting in the seat of being a voice hearer. And what I've found is that the Lotus Sutra is really a perfect sutra for an exploration of both the surprising and clear wisdom presented by the Buddha and also the perplexing and sometimes jarring language and images and admonitions that can kind of ring of a stifling old rhetoric. And I've found that both of those have been true for me as I've read it and studied it. Thich Nhat Hanh has written a commentary on the Lotus Sutra, and he describes its evolution over a couple of centuries and its movement through different languages and cultures. So the writing and compilation of the sutra began in the first century before Common Era, and that was about 400 years after the death of the Buddha. And initially the teachings were transmitted orally. It was long before we had the technology for written text. And so they were done often in verse, as it's easier to catch the cadence and rhythm of a verse, to remember it and pass it on. And as I've read the sutra, a verse that's come to me almost as an example, and it's perhaps not a really good one, but I'm going to present it anyway. And it goes, "You better not shout, you better not cry, you better not pout." And it goes on. It may be familiar to quite a few of you. So it has a tune to it as well, but you know, it's one that sticks with you. You've got visuals and memory and words and rhymes. And it may seem kind of unseasonal right now to be singing that, but I hope they'll become a bit more clear as I go along here, why it came to mind for me. So when you translate verse and poems into another language, often you lose some of the beauty and meaning of the words. So in the sutra, there was also some text that's added in. So there's a combination of verse and text. And the writings are often quite theatrical. And it's a way to bring life to the teachings and make them accessible to more people, not just to scholars. And Thich Nhat Hanh describes two styles of writings in the sutra, and he calls them historical and ultimate. And in the historical vein, it's more about the actual lifetime and teachings of the Buddha. And in these verses, he says, "The mind and eyes are fixed on the earth." And in the ultimate writings, there's more of an exploration of eternal meaning, so beyond time and space. And the mind and eyes are fixed on space. So the sutra was begun in the 1st century BCE and completed at the end of the 2nd century Common Era. So that's around 300 years that it took to, you know, write the stories down and kind of put them in order and gather them together into this Lotus Sutra, which is a very long sutra. It's got about 28 chapters, I believe. Yeah. And so that's, you know, about 300 years, and really it's still evolving today as it's translated into English and other languages, and more commentaries are written. And it, as the teachings, you know, pass from person to person, it keeps evolving and becoming alive, just as we're doing, you know, during the practice period in this evening. You know. And I found, with all the transitions and the wrappings of different interpretations, the core teachings really shine through brilliantly and clearly. And it truly is a collaboration and a celebration of many minds and beings. So the spirit of the Lotus Sutra in its day was very revolutionary, because up until that time, Buddhism had developed into a largely monastic practice, with the belief that enlightenment and Buddhahood would come only to a very few, and for those few it was at the cost of many lifetimes of hard work and brilliance. And there wasn't much opportunity for lay people to participate other than to support the monks and nuns in the hope that it would create good karma for them and lead to a favorable rebirth. But the stories in the Lotus Sutra really explode this concept, and they break apart that conservative idea that only a few people can integrate the teachings. And instead, the teachings and indeed magic of the Buddha rain down on everyone, everywhere. And this is the theme of the 5th chapter that I'm going to discuss this evening. It's called the Parable of Medicinal Herbs, or sometimes it's called Dharma Rain. And the metaphor here is that the teachings of the Buddha are like the rain that comes from a great cloud that covers the earth. And like the rain, they fall down equally on all. So both the prose and the verse describe all the various plants and herbs and trees, and the size of them are small, medium, and large, that all grow according to their own nature. Describes the different conditions that they grow in, you know, parched plains or fertile valleys or rocky hills. And then it talks about how the rain comes to all of the plants and to all beings, wherever they are and in every condition. And it talks about how the Buddha sees into the hearts of all of us and knows what we need to enhance our growth. And there are many different beings and countless teachings. But the flavor of the teachings is the same, and that's of liberation. That's the flavor of it. So I'm just going to read a little bit from Thich Nhat Hanh's commentary. So this whole book is commenting on the Lotus Sutra. Living beings cannot see into their own true nature right away, but the Buddha can. The Tathagata looks deeply into different beings, their forms, their essence, and their innate dispositions, and so is able to offer the Dharma in the way that is most beneficial to them. Seeing that one kind of disciple will best be able to follow a particular path of practice, the Buddha opens that Dharma gate. Mahayana sutras often mention 84,000 Dharma doors, which is a way of saying that there are an infinite number of teachings and methods by which living beings may be liberated. The Dharma is described as being of a single flavor, just as the rain has one function, one effect, to nourish all the different species of plants and cause them to grow. The different teachings offered by the Tathagata as skillful means have but one taste, the taste of liberation and universal wisdom that delivers all beings to the realm of peace and joy. I think that's quite a good summary of what is said in this chapter. And I'm now going to read a little bit from the chapter itself, from chapter 5 of the Lotus Sutra. And I'm using a book, it's a translation by Jean Reeves, which was published in 2008, so it's quite a recent one. Oh. also, it, as in most of these chapters and teaching, it's the setup is that the Buddha is talking to disciples and lots of beings and people coming to learn. And in this one, he talks to one disciple called Kajapa. So this is the Buddha talking. Kajapa, suppose that in the 3,000 great thousandfold world, growing on mountains, along rivers and streams, in valleys and in different soils, there are plants, trees, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs of various and numerous kinds, with different names and colors. A dense cloud spreads over all of them, covering the whole 3,000 great thousandfold world, and pours rain down on all equally and at the same time. The moisture reaches all the plants, trees, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs, with their little roots, little stems, little branches, little leaves, their medium-sized roots, medium-sized stems, medium-sized branches, medium-sized leaves, and wait for it, their big roots, big stems, big branches, and big leaves. Every tree, large or small, according to whether it is superior, middling, or inferior, receives its share. The rain from the same cloud goes to each according to its nature and kind, causing it to grow, bloom, and bear fruit. Though all grow in the same soil and are moistened by the same rain, these plants and trees are all different. So you can get the sense from just that little bit about the detail that's gone into and the repetition, and also the really strong encouragement there is that you know, that the teaching is available to everybody and will just come to us as it does to the plants. And then a little bit further on it goes, it is just as that great cloud rains on all the plants, trees, thickets, forest, and medicinal herbs, and each according to its nature and kind equally receives the moisture so that it grows and develops. So too, the Dharma preached by the Tathagata always has one character and flavor, namely liberation, separation, and extinction, which amounts to the attainment of all-inclusive wisdom. When living beings hear the Dharma of the Tathagata, though they embrace, read, recite, and practice it as preached, they themselves are not aware of the blessing they have received. Why? Because only the Tathagata understands the kind, the character, the embodiment, and the nature of all these living beings, what they have in mind, what they think, and what they practice. He knows how they keep things in mind, how they think, and how they practice. He knows what teachings they keep in mind, what teachings they think about, what teachings they practice, and he knows by what teachings they attain what teachings. So this is, when I read this part, this is when really the rest of that song came to my mind. He knows when you are sleeping, he sees when you're awake. He knows if you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. And it's a little bit of that same idea, that there's somebody that can see right into you and knows what's going on in your mind and heart. And it made me a bit nervous to think about that, you know, and the fear, I think, that came up for me is the fear of being judged. And I remember as a child being a little bit creeped out by that song, that Santa Claus knew exactly what I was doing, even though, you know, I was trying to hide it. And so that sort of fear of not being accepted for who I really was, if somebody really saw into my heart and mind. But the sutra, and I hope I don't get struck down for comparing the Lotus Sutra to Santa Claus. But, anyway. but the sutra does go on to say, and this is in the verse part, this is again the Buddha talking, I look upon all things without exception as equal. I have no interest anywhere in favoring one over another, or in cherishing one and hating another. I have no greed or attachments, and I'm always impartial. At all times and for all, I teach the Dharma equally. Eminent and humble, high and low, precept keepers and precept breakers, those of great character and those who are imperfect, those of correct views and those of wrong views, quick-witted and dull-witted, I have the Dharma reign equally on all, without sparing or neglecting any. So I think from that, I really get that we don't have to fear being judged, even though we're seen exactly as who we are. And also it seems that, just like Santa Claus, the Buddha will bring us whatever we need, although it might not necessarily be what we think we want. So they talk about the conditions relevant to growth here. And just as for plants, they grow in rich or rocky soil. They might be crowded or have a lot of space. They have their own genetics and they're subject to weather. And for us, we also have different conditions, like degrees of health, levels of wealth or lack of it. We all have personalities and families, and we live in a culture and a political time. So all these different conditions affect who we are and how we grow, and they're like the gifts we are given and the lessons that we have to work with in this lifetime. So we don't need to compare ourselves to others or to try to be like others. We don't need to be any different from how we are right now. And we don't need to go anywhere or run after anything. The Dharma rain will fall on us right where we are. And at the same time, we don't need to make anyone else different. And we don't need to fix them, even if we notice that they're doing it wrong. We need only to take care of our own practice. So Dharma rain falls on everyone right where they are. And as the Dharma rain falls on us, it falls on us alone according to our needs. And it also falls on everyone and everything, so we are not separate. And this also says to me that there are many paths and practices to take on the way to wholeness. We don't need to become too attached to one way, even to being a Buddhist. And rain falls more than once. So our practice happens continuously. It's not as if we say, okay, I've meditated 800 hours and listened to 80 Dharma talks and done 1,000 good deeds, so I've arrived. It's our practice, just like our lives, happen continuously. And we're rained on continuously. So the Dharma rain is eternal. As I was contemplating the Lotus Sutra, in this fifth chapter, I was struck also by the thought that our speech is in a way like rain. And when we speak, our words fall everywhere around us. And now with the World Wide Web, that area where our words can land instantly if you tweet or text or post is extremely large. And in a book that I've read, it was fairly popular a while ago, called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. There are four behaviors that are said to lead to personal freedom, real pillars to live by. And the first one says, be impeccable with your speech. So be impeccable with your speech. And in the verse of repentance that we often chant at the beginning of the day during a sesshin, we say, all my ancient twisted karma, from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. So born through body, speech, and mind. Right speech is emphasized in Buddhist teachings. So our speech reflects our thoughts and values, our desires and our integrity, and it shapes our actions. And once it leaves our mouths or smart devices, it falls everywhere. So we should be impeccable with our speech, and not just to others, but also to ourselves. I think we need to be careful and mindful with what we say to ourselves. So what I've found is that the Lotus Sutra is strange and powerful. It gives us great encouragement and is a really positive force in the world. And it's almost because of its superlatives and the fancy words and images, the repetition. It draws forth a kind of a complete, total, perfect faith and a desire for enlightenment. And I've really found that happening for myself. I find myself getting drawn into the excitement and promise of it. And there's various places where they say that just by reciting it, that magic happens and transformation occurs by hearing it or reciting it, and healing can prevail. So I thought what we could do just now is I've got some a little bit of the verse in the chapter printed out here, and I'm going to pass them out, and then we can just chant them together as a chance just to practice that. Okay, so this is from the Lotus Sutra. The Dharma King, breaker of ideas of being, appears in this world. In accord with desires of living beings, he teaches the Dharma in a variety of ways. The Tathagata is highly honored and profoundly wise. Yet he has long kept silent about this matter, not wanting to teach it hastily. If the wise hear it, they will be able to believe and understand. But the unwise will have doubts and worries, perpetually missing the point. Therefore, Kashyapa, I teach them according to their strengths, with various explanations, so they will gather right verse. You should know Kashyapa. It's like a great cloud rising over the world, covering everything everywhere. A beneficent cloud full of moisture, lightning flashing across the sky, and the sound of thunder reverberating afar, bringing joy to all. The sun's rays are hidden, and the earth becomes cool. The cloud descends and spreads, as if it might be touched or plucked from the sky. The rain falls everywhere, coming down on all sides, flowing everywhere without limit, reaching over the face of the earth, into the hidden recesses of mountains, streams, and steep valleys, where the plants and trees grow and medicinal herbs, big trees and small, 100 grains, rice seedlings, sugar cane, and grapevines. All are moistened by the rain and abundantly enriched. The dry ground is soaked, and both herbs and trees flower. Though their bodies, forms, and capacities may be large or small, the moisture they receive is the same, enabling each to flourish. We can just be aware of, as we're chanting that verse, of how many hundreds and thousands of other people have read and chanted and written those same words through all the centuries, and how it draws Buddhas and Bodhisattvas when they hear it. So I'd like to just invite you to kind of turn within right now, to just settle on your cushions or chairs, and just turn within and be aware of your breathing for a minute. And just kind of let the cadence and harmony of that verse kind of settle into you. And feel it being just like the rain of Dharma falling down upon you, with no effort on your part. Providing for you exactly what you need. It may be the same or different from the person next to you. It may be the same or different from your partner, friends, or family members. So allow yourself to receive the rain.